Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, November 9th, 2016, the day after the crazy election in the United States, episode 12.15, the Week 10 preview show, or as most people in America are calling it,
it's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Feel fine. Yes, I do, people. Not really. I had an awful day today trying to explain to my two daughters that everything was going to be okay. And even though there is a new president-elect, which we did not vote for, they are going to be okay. Their friends are going to be okay. And we'll just keep humming along. Anyways, I've now jumped out to a 6-3 lead in the challenge game as the Cowboys blasted the Browns 35-10. I still have no idea what Mark was thinking. Mark, what were you thinking? I'll talk about the crazy election results. No, not the presidency of the United States, but the city of San Diego saying no to the Chargers. Big Ben looked nothing like himself in the Steelers' loss to the Ravens. The Cowboys and Patriots own the league's best record at 7-1 at the midway point, and I will tell you why it is time for the Rams to start Jared Goff, like now. Plus, Stephen Fry will put his Week 10 picks up against me, and all I have to ask is, can the fans get back on track? Because I
am the smartest man alive!
That's right, let's chomp it in!
Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves.
All right, time back. Yes, it is November 9th, the day after the U.S. presidential election. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. I won't dwell on it. I can't believe that this is the America that I live in. And all I would like to do today, seriously, is talk to about the 320,000 people in Florida, the 285,000 people in Pennsylvania, the 225,000 or so folks in Wisconsin that all decided to go and vote for an independent candidate. And that's, you're right. You can do that. But had just half of those people in those states voted for Hillary, we would have a different president coming up. So you can vote. You can vote. But if you vote for a candidate you know is no chance of winning, then you really seriously don't care who the next president is. And that's what happened. There were a lot of people out there who seriously decided they didn't care who the next president was by voting independent. And that, I think, hurt us all. Let's see how the next 4 years go for America. All right, I'm going to quickly jump into the Week 9 recap. Not a lot of news going on right now other than everybody's watching whether Tony Romo is going to play for the Cowboys or not. Yes, he's back at practice. Dudes, come on. Let's find news outlets. Let's find something else to talk about, all right? People are talking about Belichick and him sending a letter to Donald Trump. They're friends. He's been friends with Trump for like forever. It's none of your business what Belichick wrote in a letter to Trump. I mean, Belichick writes letters, I'm sure, to all his friends. It was about friendship. Don't read into politics. This is what I don't understand, seriously, is because you feel one way and you're voting one way, the people who are voting against you are evil. That's not the case. It isn't. Now, sure, it may be the case for some people, but not all of them. I don't believe all Republicans are evil and bad and are racist and hate African Americans and Hispanics and Muslims and everything else. No, not all Republicans. Are there some Republicans? Yes. I can clearly tell you that is the case when the KKK endorses a candidate. So I can tell you, yeah, there are some people that are like that, but not all of them. So let Belichick write a letter to Trump. They've been friends for forever, way before he ever started running for president. So if Belichick wants to send a letter to his friend, so be it. So be it. It's none of this. I just don't understand why NFL media has to go and find stories that aren't really stories, that don't meet any criteria to being a story relating to the game of football. And that's all I'm going to say about that. So let's get to week 9, where we started with El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana. And how about them Oakland Raiders? Raider Nation is live and a well 30-20 win over the Denver Broncos. Only the second time the Oakland Raiders have won at home this year. They're now 2-2 at home, a perfect 5-0 on the road, 7-2 sitting atop the AFC West all by themselves. I said the Raiders were going to be pretty good this year. I did not expect at the midway point they would be alone atop the division at 7-2. That is pretty impressive for the Oakland Raiders. And they're doing it with a mixture of things. What they did at the Denver Broncos, I think they gave everybody the blueprint of how to go after the Denver Broncos. You just run at them. You run at them. You run at Von Miller. You run on towards the other side at DeMarcus Ware. You run up the middle. You run at Denver. Eliminate that massive pass rush that they have. And that is how you take care of the Denver Broncos. They ran on them all night long and got the 30-20 victory. Denver's offense is going to step up. If they think that they can just ride their defense to another championship, they are sadly mistaken. I had Denver. Mark Wood had the Oakland Raiders. He should have probably made this the challenge game. He did not. We will get to the challenge game in a moment. But fans did pick up a game here as Oakland defeats Denver. Derek Carr playing very well. Michael Crabtree. Didn't everybody think Michael Crabtree was done when he left the San Francisco 49ers? I certainly did. Well, he has been resurrected in Oakland. And Oakland usually is not a place where wide receivers go and resurrect their careers. Usually we say if a wide receiver goes to Oakland, they're going to the die. Not Michael Crabtree. He has found the fountain of youth there, and his connections with David Carr, pretty fantastic. Good for him. Crab Money Tree is looking good. Once again, Oakland 30, Denver 20. Let's move on to games of the week. Thursday night football, the Atlanta Falcons travel to Tampa Bay to face the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I think it was payback time. Do you remember week 1? Tampa Bay went into Atlanta and got that win. Not a lot of people saw that coming. I certainly didn't think that Tampa Bay could start the season off with a win against Atlanta. Since that game, though, it has been completely different for these organizations. The Atlanta Falcons found their offense, and they went on a tear after losing 31-24 at home to the Bucs. They went on the road to beat Oakland. They beat New Orleans. They beat Carolina at home. They beat Denver in Denver. They lost a squeaker by 2 points to the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, one that could have gone the other way had the officials reached for their flag and thrown the hanky. They lost a crazy game to San Diego, 33-30 in Atlanta. Then they took care of Green Bay, and they just put a whooping on Tampa Bay. Revenge for that. They are 6-3. Their losses coming week 1 to Tampa Bay, and then they lost week 6 to Seattle, and the week 7, the very next week, to the San Diego Chargers at home. Atlanta is looking like right now their offense is humming, and if they could just get their defense to play a little bit better football, they will be okay. They spanked Tampa Bay 43-28. That was my lock of the week because they were only favored by 3.5 points. 3.5, they won by a whole lot more than that, taking care of business. There was some confusion at the end of the game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers pulled Jameis Winston. A lot of the media reported that they thought it was because he had injured his knee, But after the game, Jameis Winston said, hey, man, I feel good. I think the coaches just decided to pull me out. So we're really never going to know what happened there. But the thing about Tampa Bay is once they get down, it gets bad.
It was bad. It had nothing, no fire, no energy, no nothing.
No nothing after they get down. So I think the thing there for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you have to look at the coaching situation to make sure that they can, you know, a lot of people are like, are they good enough to make adjustments to help the team, or just the adjustments don't come? And Tampa Bay looked very good to start the game, and then they just kind of fizzled off the end, and Atlanta kind of took off with it. So 43-28, Atlanta, as I said, improved to 6-3, while the Tampa Bay Buccaneers drop to 3-5, down in the cellar of the NFC South, along with the Carolina Panthers, who are also at 3-5 with a win. I'll talk about that one in a minute. Next up, the Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Baltimore to face the Baltimore Ravens. Initially, I had Baltimore, and Mark had the Pittsburgh Steelers. I decided to change my mind when Ben Roethlisberger was activated. Man, I made a mistake there. I should have just stayed with my initial pick of the Baltimore Ravens. They won 21-14, and now the Baltimore Ravens, of all the teams in the AFC North, find themselves tied with the Pittsburgh Steelers at 4-4 atop the division, with the Cincinnati Bengals just a half game back at 3-4-1. And then, of course, we've got the winless Cleveland Browns, who fall to 0-9. They are now on 0-16. Watch. So, Pittsburgh loses 21-14. They fought hard. They fought all the way back. Ben Roethlisberger scrambled for a touchdown to make it 21-14. On the ensuing onside kick attempt, I have no idea what their kicker was thinking, what he wanted to try. He wanted to try some cutesy kick, you know, pass the ball, kick it with your back leg, kind of, Lord of the Riverdance dance kick move or whatever. It did not go a yard. Literally, the football did not even travel 1 yard. Now, I know you're smart, and you know that an onside kick has to travel at least 10 yards. His didn't even travel one. It barely moved forward about 3 inches. That was not good. That was the worst attempt. I thought I had seen the worst attempt at an onside kick when I was the first game in London, the international series, 9 years ago now. 9 years ago, first international series game between the New York Giants and the Miami Dolphins, the thing that kind of blew up here, NFL rants and raves. We were at that game. The Dolphins scored a touchdown late to make it 13-10. They went and tried an onside kick, and the kick slid out of bounds, didn't bounce, didn't pop up, didn't do anything. It just literally slid across the field and out after about traveling 8 yards. And I thought that was the worst onside kick I had ever seen in my life. This one trumps that. It was so bad. Somebody needs to go over to the special teams coach and get the kicker and get them together and say, whatever that was, don't ever try it again. Everybody with me. 1, 2, 3. Kickers. My goodness, that was awful. Anyways, 4-4 for both of those teams. Is 8-8 going to win the AFC North this year? That's certainly a possibility. And if you look at all of the records, outside of the Dallas Cowboys and the New England Patriots, who are sitting at the top of the league with 7-1 records, then right after that you have the Oakland Raiders at 7-2, Atlanta Falcons at 6-3. You look at the rest of the teams, you're going to see a lot of 5-3s, 4-4s, 4-5s, just a ton of them. And the league has now really gotten what it's always wanted. That one word, parity. That is what you're seeing right now in the National Football League. There's 32 teams. I'd say there's less than five of them, five or less, that are really, really special football teams right now. Then you've got about five or less that are just hot garbage, okay? And, you know, I'm not going to throw any names out there, but if you look at the records, you know exactly who I'm talking about. And then you've got, so that leaves 22 to 24 teams right there in the middle that are all jumbled and close to each other within a game or two of each other. That is what the National Football League has always wanted. 4-4s, 3-4-1s, 4-5s, 5-3s, all right there within a game of each other. That is what the National Football League has become. Parity is for real. It is here. You can see it in the standings. Go take a look if you do not believe me. Anyways, there you go. 21-14, Baltimore. We both missed it because I was a boob. Give me a boob of the day for changing my pick and deciding to go with Pittsburgh. I should have just stayed with my initial gut and kept the Baltimore Ravens, but I didn't. We'll move on to the Philadelphia Eagles traveling to New York to face the New York Giants. I had Philly thinking that they'd take care of business. The Giants, all of a sudden, found an offense again. And they won the game 28-23. Carson Wentz, boy, for everything that everybody was saying about Carson Wentz at the beginning of the season, yeah, this rookie's the bomb, man. He's great. He doesn't turn over the ball. Well, he's since learned how to turn over the ball, has become a turnover machine, had a couple other turnovers early in this football game. That's where the Giants kind of built an early lead based on those Carson Wentz INTs, gave the Giants short field. They jumped out to a 14-0 lead, and then they kind of built on that. Now, the Eagles, give them credit. They fought back. They got back into this game. But in the end, they just could not get it done. 28-23, New York Giants win at home. Philadelphia loses. And the NFC East is starting to get a little tight. Once again, the Philadelphia Eagles are at the bottom of the division with 4-4 record. Redskins just above them at 4-3-1. The Giants improved to 5-3. And Dallas up there at 7-1. Got themselves a little cushion with their 7-game win streak. Then moving on to Minnesota, where the Minnesota Vikings traveled to, actually are at home, hosting the Detroit Lions divisional game. I thought Minnesota would bounce back from that 2-game losing streak. They'd finally get the win under the belt. Detroit coming in, they weren't so hot. They were struggling on the road. But Detroit found a way. Tie the game late. Give it to a kicker who can actually make a long field goal, 58-yarder, I believe, to tie the game at 16 and send it to overtime. In overtime, Detroit got the ball, and they knew what to do with it, marched it down the field, punched it in. Golden Tate with a spectacular move there to score a touchdown and give the Detroit Lions a 22-16 victory in overtime. And, look, the Minnesota Vikings are reeling, people. Everybody, they were 5-0, looking pretty good. Everything was great, hunky-dory. And now they've lost 3 in a row, with a couple of them being at home. So it's that division now is anybody's. I mean, well, maybe not the Chicago Bears. They're down there at 2-6. They're okay, but they're not going to contend. But you've got the Packers at 4-4, the Lions at 5-4, and Minnesota 5-3. Seriously, any one of those three teams can go on a run here and win that division. It's wide open. Final there in overtime, 22-16. Speaking of the other team that I thought was going to start separating themselves, the Green Bay Packers, they hosted the Indianapolis Colts. And from the get-go, boom, Colts had a 101-yard return for a touchdown on the kickoff, 7-0 lead, and they never looked back. They took care of Green Bay 31-26. The Packers are now, and I think I actually tweeted this, and I'll say it again, remember when the Green Bay Packers never lost at home, where it was Lambeau and it was the history of Lambeau and the frozen tundra, which you're really saying the frozen land. That's because tundra's frozen land. So the frozen tundra or the frozen land of Lambeau Field, and there was this mystique and you just didn't go in there and beat the Green Bay Packers. Well, people are doing it this year, and I can't believe that the Indianapolis Colts did it. Both Mark and I had Green Bay. We both lost that one. All right, the final game of the week, Buffalo Bills travel to the Pacific Northwest to face the Seattle Seahawks on Monday Night Football, and this is going to launch me into my first rant, and probably the only rant of the night because I'm trying to do a quick show here, still trying to recover from the madness that was Tuesday election night. So anyways, I'm sorry I had to take a little drink there. Anyways, Richard Sherman, My rant is going to be on Richard Sherman. I usually don't like to rant on an individual. I like to rant on a team or a play or a, some officiating call that happened. This is going to be a call on a rant on Richard Sherman. Not so much, you know, well, yeah, kind of what he did to the Bills kicker. He was offsides. He knew he was offsides. He was offsides by a mile, okay? And he still took a shot at the kicker's knee. That was Bush League. And the fact that when he looked over to the sideline and he kind of just shrugged his shoulders and did kind of like, you know, whatever. I'm not a big fan of kickers, but that was weak. That was very weak. And then later on in the game, he had an interception. And after the interception, he went over to the, I guess the play kind of took him over to the Bills sideline, and he mouthed off at Rex Ryan, the head coach for the Buffalo Bills. And I like what Bill Rex Ryan said after the game. He said, look, I just told him, you're too good a player for that. And he is. He is too good a player for that. But my question is, I'm not sure how someone who is so educated and is so talented on the football field can act so dumb and look like a complete idiot. Because that's what Rich Sherman looked like and acted like on the football field Monday night against the Buffalo Bills. A complete idiot. A moronic, stupid, dumb jock who had no inclination for anyone else on the field except for himself. How is that even possible when you're that good, that talented, and that educated? Come on, Richard Sherman, you are better than that. I'm going to go with Rex Ryan. I almost never agree with anything Rex Ryan says lately, but I'll agree with this. You are too good a player to act like that. That was very, very bad. That was poor sportsmanship. You could have ruined somebody's career by what you did to that Buffalo Bill kicker. Not good, Sherman. And that is my rant for the day. You should not act like an idiot because you're much better than that. Okay. The final there on Monday Night Football, Seattle squeaked out a win 31-25. I won't even go to the officiating on that kicker call. There should have been a roughing the kicker. They shouldn't have gotten a 15-yard penalty. Instead, they said, oh, the kicker has to go out one game because you came out to look at him because you know what? His leg got taken out from underneath him. Okay, so the Bills were smart. They clocked the ball, and then he came out to kick the field goal. There was a penalty offsides on Richard Sherman, so they got 5 yards closer. But while they're waiting because the Buffalo Bills changed players, the officials stood over the ball to let the Seattle Seahawks change players. Now, when the official does that, when he walks away, he usually resets the play clock to 25 seconds because the offense is waiting on you. Now you got to give them a little bit more time to reset themselves. The play clock had gone down to 5 seconds before the official moved out of the way, and he didn't reset the clock, and so then Buffalo was flagged for delay of game. Now that's crazy. Now it's 5 yards further. He misses the field goal. There's 3 points there that the officials, because of their poor officiating, by not throwing the flag on Richard Sherman to begin with, okay, ruined the end of that whole two-minute clock operation by the Buffalo Bills and cost them 3 points at the very least. Later on in the game, at the end of the game, Buffalo Bills driving. They're chasing 6 points. They should be chasing three. But as it is, they're chasing 3 points. Fourth down, Tyrod Taylor goes to throw a ball in the back of the end zone. There are two pass interference penalties. One was away from the ball where the defender just shoved the wide receiver and knocked him out. And I think if you look at the replay, Tyrod Taylor's still in the pocket when he just levels him at the goal line. That didn't get thrown, didn't get called. Then, the pass after he goes out and he throws the pass, Earl Thomas knocks the wide receiver out from his particular route, and that wasn't called. At maybe not pass interference, but at the very least, illegal contact. I am tired of officials not throwing flags when it's convenient for them. And it's been convenient for them lately at the end of the game. Because why? We hear a lot, well, penalties should not change the outcome of the game for the last couple plays of the game. No! I have said it many times, and I will say it one more time. If it is a penalty on the first play of a preseason game, it is a penalty on the last play of any game, including the Super Bowl. And the officials don't do that. They should start being held accountable. The league needs to do something about it. I am a big proponent for full-time officials. I don't care. Look, I don't care if half of your officials say they don't want full-time jobs. They're like, you can't officiate for us anymore. Because half of these guys aren't even doing their job anyways for 6 months of the year. Have them be full-time officials where they could come in every week, do some job study, take a look at some films, look at all of the game films from the week before, and they can get better. And until they get better, this league is going to remain a joke. And that's what it is right now. It's a joke. I was literally watching that final play and saying, that was a joke. That did not get called is a joke. So, anyways, Seattle improves. They improve in the standings. And the Buffalo Bills drop. Seattle is now at 5-2-1, alone in first place in the NFC West. While the Buffalo Bills drop to 4-5, they're now a full 3.5 games back of the New England Patriots. Oof, that was too much. Let's get to the games of interest last week. The Miami Dolphins took one from the New York Jets, 27-23. The Jets took the lead there late. And on the ensuing kickoff, they let Drake take it 101 yards for a touchdown. Actually, 99 yards for a touchdown. It was impressive. They took the lead right back, and then they played some solid defense. Rattled Fitzpatrick a little bit. And I think it's time for the New York Jets to figure out what they've got at quarterback. For a guy who obviously they didn't want to play that much money to because they didn't make him a long-term contract, only signed him to 1 year. He's not their guy. They know he's not their guy. They just wanted to bring him in to make sure that they had someone who was viable. But he's not their guy, and it's time that the Jets do something about it. Maybe Geno's not their guy either, but it's time for a change. And the Miami Dolphins, they get a good win. They improve to 4-4 right there, right in the thick of things with in the AFC, at least for the wild card as far as the wild card is concerned. The New York Jets stick a fork in them. They're at 3-6. They would have to literally win out for them to even have hope of a wild card. And that, my friends, is not going to happen. Final there, 27-23, Miami on top. I had Miami and Mark had the New York Jets. All right, the next game where we differed on, I had the Carolina Panthers on the road. Well, Mark had the Los Angeles Rams in L.A. The Rams, once again, no offense. 13-10 was the final. That score is a little misleading. It was 13-3 the entire game, most likely, just about. They scored a touchdown with like 22 seconds left in the game to make it 13-10. It was bad. Their offense just is horrible. Horrible offensively. Case Keenum is pretty bad. And I'll ask this question again. I've been asking it all season since day one. If Case Keenum is the best that the Rams have to offer at the quarterback position, what in the world is Jared Goff like? There's Carson Wentz. There's Dak Prescott. The Patriots played Brissett for a little bit. Hogan's come in a little bit for the Cleveland Browns. There's Cody Kessler who's playing for the Cleveland Browns. There are all these other rookie quarterbacks playing for other teams in the National Football League, but Jared Goff hasn't been on the field once. There's something to say either the Rams whiffed on this pick tremendously or there's something else going on that we don't know. And for Jeff Fisher to just sit on there on his press conference and say, when he's ready, he'll be ready and he'll start. How can you not have this guy ready yet? Do you understand there are other rookie quarterbacks out there playing ball and balling out? How can you not have Jared Goff ready? I have to now look at the coach and the coaching staff and the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator and say, how is it possible that there are other teams who took quarterbacks later than Jared Goff and have got them ready to play football and they're playing decent football, and you can't get the number one quarterback taken overall, not just the number one quarterback, but the number one pick overall in the entire draft? You spent all that to get him and you can't put him on the field. That's coaching. That's coaching too, because there are other coaches who got their rookies playing ball. The Los Angeles Rams have to figure out how they can get their rookie to get out there and play ball. And why not? After this loss to the Carolina Panthers, the Rams are now at 3-5. Yes, they're only 2.5 games back of the Seattle Seahawks. But honestly, anybody think the Rams are going to make the playoffs now at 3-5? The way that offense is playing, the defense keeps them in games. You got to give it up to that defense. But at some point, the defense is going to give. You can't keep expecting miracle games and miracle performances from your defense. 13-10 the final. Back-to-back weeks that the Los Angeles Rams can only muster 10 points. And you know what? Here's the thing. They held the Carolina Panthers to 13 points. That is a good football team offensively, and they held them to 13 points. And they could not win the game. When your offense can only score 10 points or less, you're not winning a lot of football games. Just not going to happen. And the final game of interest, the Tennessee Titans travel to San Diego to face the San Diego Chargers. Both Mark and I had San Diego. The Chargers have been an enigma. They improved to 4-5 as they get a 43-35 victory over the Tennessee Titans, dropping Tennessee to 4-5. Now, both of those teams are right there, right in the middle. San Diego has the ball bounce a couple their way in a couple of games, and they're actually could be sitting at 6-3. But that's not the way it happened in those games, and they lost some tough games there where they had good leads in the end. Very interesting to see how the San Diego Chargers are going to play out. Now, well, I'm saving it for the executive producer segment because that's where he wanted me to talk about it. So I'll talk about the San Diego Chargers and the vote that happened yesterday for San Diego. Now, real quickly, the NAP games. I'll just talk about the first one briefly because it was the challenge game. For some reason, unknowns to me, Mark Wood decided that he would take the Cleveland Browns over the Dallas Cowboys and make that the challenge game. Wasn't even close. Was never in doubt. 35-10 beat down Dallas over Cleveland. That, of course, makes me...
I am the smartest man alive!
Squeak! Squeak! Hear it again. Hear it again.
I am the smartest man alive!
Squeak! 35-10. I know Mark, he's like, the Cleveland Browns can be bad all year. You know, they're going to get some good play from their offense. And you got to hand it to this Dallas Cowboy defense. Nobody expected them to be as good as they have been during the 7-game win streak. And Dak and Ezekiel keep balling out. Jason Witten had a phenomenal game, over 150 yards and a touchdown. He could not be contained. This is a big game for him. And you got to hand it to the rookie, Dak Prescott. He finds somebody to go to every game. Last week it was Dez Bryant who had a big game. This week it's Jason Witten. Who knows who it's going to be this week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, next snap game, Jacksonville at Kansas City. Kansas City gets a 19-14 win without Alex Smith, who was out because of a concussion. Nick Foles was at QB. He had his ups and downs, but Kansas City was able to get the win. And the final nap game, the New Orleans Saints, 41-23 over San Francisco. Mark had San Francisco. I had the Saints. Saints took care of business and just routed San Francisco. There were flashes early on in that game where San Francisco looked pretty good, but in the end, just too much. I'm not sure San Francisco wins another game this year. All right, let's get to our executive producer segment. Once again, I'd like to thank Jeremy Parker, who is the exec producer of the show. And he wants to know, with San Diego rejecting the financing of a new stadium, where do the Chargers go from here? Two teams in L.A., question mark? Well, that's a great question. The problem is that it's the ownership there of the San Diego Chargers. Spanos just not really wanting to be a tenant in the stadium for the L.A. Rams. That being said, I don't think he has any options. He doesn't have the money to build a stadium himself, which is what Kroenke's doing for the Rams. He doesn't have a city that wants to build his team a stadium, i.e. San Diego just voted no new stadium. L.A.'s not going to build him a new stadium because Kroenke's building one right down the street. So if he comes to Los Angeles, he's going to have to be a tenant of the Rams facilities. He may not be happy with it, but I think that's the best thing for them. Qualcomm is just, it's run down and dilapidated. It's just not a good stadium, not a great facility. And I know San Diego's like, they don't care. We don't care if you leave. We're not building you a new stadium. Either you stay playing at Qualcomm or you're gone. And I think they have to go. Where they're going to go, I'm not sure. The NFL might look at St. Louis again because they still have a fairly new stadium and they're without a team. So possibly the St. Louis Chargers. Makes more sense to be the Los Angeles Rams, but it's going to be the ownership there that's going to have to make that decision that they will be okay being a tenant and not being a partial owner of the stadium. So that's what the Chargers' decision are: stay and continue to play at Qualcomm, renew a lease there and continue to stay in San Diego, or come up to Los Angeles, be a tenant with the Rams' new facility, or move somewhere else. Find another city that has an existing stadium or that will build you a stadium. Those are the three options, and I think the only viable option really is for the San Diego Chargers to move to Los Angeles and accept being a tenant with the Rams. Now, there might be a fourth option. There might be a fourth option is that Las Vegas is building a stadium, and the Raiders and the Chargers were trying to get a deal done so they could both move to Los Angeles. That didn't get done. That didn't pass. So it's a possibility that now Spanos goes back to Mark Davis and says, Mark, you know, you're working something in Las Vegas. Can we jump on board with you guys? And maybe since the city of Las Vegas has passed to get a stadium built, maybe two teams go there. Who knows? But that might be a fourth option. But that is far-fetched because the league still has to investigate Las Vegas and decide whether they're even going to allow a team to move there. So that is that. Now, Jeremy also is asking what the NFL should do about officials. He says there were some awful calls. There were some awful no calls this weekend. He's like, Jeremy has done some American football officiating, so he has a lot of empathy for officials. He knows how it is and how hard it is to officiate American football. And he says there's always room for improvement. I've suggested full-time refs, and he's, you know, wondering that. He's like, but as he asks a very good question, would any of them want to give up their careers for the NFL so they could be full-time officials? He's like, can the NFL recruit and keep officials that they need, or is there enough of a full-time official to do the – is there enough work for a full-time official to do during the week? I think there is, because I think you can study film, you can review games, you can review teams that you're getting ready to officiate, and that's, you know, that's not just game time experience. That's experience, you know, not only officiating games, but actually getting down to the nitty-gritty of the book. I wonder, because the rule book of the National Football League is immense, just how many officials know the nitty-gritty of all of the rules there is in the league. And you'll get that if you get full-time officials, because that will be their job. It will be their job to know the minutiae of every aspect of every rule in the league. I don't know if they all know them. I know the head official does, because I've met plenty of head officials. They know the minutiae of every rule that there is to be, but I don't know if everyone else out there knows. And that's kind of interesting. All right. Before I give you my final lock this week for Week 10. I'm going to go through Week 10 picks. And this week, Stephen Fry is putting up his picks. We differ on three games, only three games. And he was he took his time. Let's put it that way. He took his time picking the challenge game. So I'll get to that. But let's get started with Week 10 picks. El juego grande estupendo de la semana. This week, the Seattle Seahawks traveled to New England to face the New England Patriots. The 5-2 Seahawks, on top of their division, the NFC West, faced the leader of the AFC East, the New England Patriots, also with one of the best records in the league at 7-1. It's a big game. Big game for both teams. Bill Belichick has already come out and said Seattle. I think there was a press conference where literally people kept asking him about this letter to Trump, and he literally just said Seattle. Focus on Seattle. Seattle, Seattle, Seattle. Seattle. I think, wait a minute. Right now, I just heard Belichick say Seattle one more time. Yep, he said it. Seattle, Seattle, Seattle. So that's their focus. Seattle Seahawks know that this is going to be a tough test. They got to travel all the way across the country to face the Patriots. But as much as I don't like it, and as much as I don't want to, and as much as I'm avoiding it, I'm picking. That's right. I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to be nice anymore. You know, if this country can vote for the man they voted for to be the next president, I don't have to be nice. That's right, the evil empire. But that's who I got. I'm taking the Patriots. So is the other Steve. He's got the Patriots too. He says, Seattle can't seem to get their offense to do much more than limp around the field. The evil empire. He even called them the evil empire. The evil empire rolls over Seattle, who are going to be too jet-lagged to realize it's over by halftime. Wow, Steve. So Steve's kind of called them the evil empire as well. And there you go. We both have the Patriots. It is going to be, I think, a good game. The Patriots are favored by 7.5 points. I'm not sure if they win by that much. Yeah, they will. They'll probably win by double digits. The Patriots are rolling right now on all cylinders. And unless Seattle can apply a ton of pressure to Tom Brady and knock him off his mark, I don't see how they have a chance to win this game. Both Steve and I have New England. That's all we'll say about El Juego Grande Estupendo. Let's move to Games of the Week. We'll start in our nation's capital, where the Washington Redskins will host the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings lost three in a row, not looking pretty good. The Washington Redskins are coming off their bye. Let's see what the other Steve has to say. This really comes down to the Redskins being able to pick apart the Vikings' defense. Although the Vikings have won four of the last five against Washington, I think the Redskins pull this one out at home coming off the bye. All right, well, there's where Steve thinks. I, on the other hand, think it's Minnesota's turn to turn it around. They have to turn it around if they want to continue what they started with that 5-0 run. They were 5-0. Things were looking really good. Then they had that bad hiccup game against the Philadelphia Eagles when they only scored 10 points. Then they lost on Monday Night Football to the Chicago Bears, only scoring 10 points. This past week, they lose in overtime to the Detroit Lions. The offense could only muster 16 points. That's not really good. 12 points per game is not going to get it done. I think they bounce out of that. They bounce back. Remember last week was the new offensive coordinator's first week at the helm. Give him a little time to kind of settle in. North Turner left. I think they get it back. I think the defense gets after Kirk Cousins. That is what has been missing over the last 3 weeks. The defense, the first 5 weeks, were playing lights out. They were scoring points. They were giving their offense short fields. They haven't done that of late. I think they get back to that. I think they get after Kirk Cousins, force him into some turnovers, give Sam Bradford and that offense short fields, and they'll do enough to win the game. So I've got Minnesota. That's the first game that we differ on right there in Games of the Week. We'll move on to Carolina, where the Carolina Panthers host the Kansas City Chiefs. Oddly enough, we both have Carolina. This is what the other Steve says. Right now, Alex Smith is projected to come back this week. There isn't much history here to lean on, so if Alex gets into the flow right away, I think Kansas City can win this. But I'm going with Carolina at home in a close one. I think I'm going to go with Carolina as well because I think their defense is starting to play much better. They've all of a sudden got a little bit of that swagger from last year back. Their defense is knocking some people around. They're making some big plays. Offensively, they're doing just enough. I think Kansas City, even if they got Alex Smith back out there, they're going to be a little tentative to have him throw the football around as much as he's been doing. I think they're going to rely on the running game. I'm not sure they'll be able to run against Carolina. Todd Gurley couldn't run against Carolina last week. Not sure if Kansas City will be able to. So I'm going to take the Carolina Panthers, and so does the other Steve. We'll move to Philadelphia, where the Philadelphia Eagles host the Atlanta Falcons. I've got the Atlanta Falcons. Look, right now, I think the NFC, Atlanta, Seattle, Dallas, I think those are the teams to look at in the NFC that could possibly go all the way into the Super Bowl. And Atlanta's one of those teams because offensively, they just look fantastic. A lot of good stuff happening in Atlanta, and I like the Falcons in this one. The other Steve says Atlanta has won the last three against Philly. The Atlanta passing game pulls this one out in Philly. I don't know how the secondary will hold up against Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu and Jacob Tammy. There's a lot of weapons that he can throw the ball to. Don't forget the running backs have been doing pretty good there for Atlanta as well. So we look to take Atlanta over Philadelphia. The New Orleans Saints host the Denver Broncos. And the other Steve says Denver has won the last four against New Orleans. Man, the other Steve's given us all kinds of history between the two teams. The Broncos pass rush will get home against Drew, and Denver pulls out an upset in the Big Easy. First of all, back-to-back games where the Denver Broncos have been dogs. Certainly proved true last week. I'm not sure New Orleans is as good as the Oakland Raiders. Even at home, I think the Denver defense will get after Drew Brees a little bit, force a couple turnovers, and I like the Denver Broncos as well, so we both agree there. Next game, the Dallas Cowboys travel to Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's see. Could this be another challenge game with the Cowboys? Let's see what the other Steve says. He says, does another week as the starter help Ben to get back into the swing of things enough to stop the Cowboys' 7-game winning streak? He's like, nope, I think the upstart rookie Ezekiel Elliott is the difference here, and Dallas wins in the Steel City. Well, you know where I'm going. I'm taking the Cowboys. I love everything about what the Cowboys are doing, both offensively and defensively. And we could see Romo on the sidelines. I'm not sure he gets into this football game, but Tony Romo, I believe, will be dressed and won't play here, but most likely gets back in the following week against the Baltimore Ravens. So keep your eyes out for that. We both have Dallas. And the final game of the week, the Cincinnati Bengals travel to New York to face the New York Giants. Look, this is a big game for both teams. All right, both of these teams, if they want to have any aspirations of the playoffs, have to win this one. They can't let this one get away from them. Giants have a little bit more wiggle room, but even still, the Cincinnati Bengals, they have no more wiggle room. With Baltimore and Pittsburgh both ahead of them, they have to win this one. Let's see. The other Steve says the Bengals surprise everyone and jump out ahead early and hang on to win with a missed field goal at the end by the Giants. He's causing a missed field goal there by the Giants for the loss. I got the Cincinnati Bengals. I think they had a bye week last week. They will certainly be ready for the Giants. Marvin Lewis does pretty good when he comes out of the bye. He'll take care of business. We both have Cincinnati there. All right, folks, we're running out of time, so I'm going to zoom by the next games. We've got the game of interest, Green Bay at Tennessee. I've got the Green Bay Packers. The other Steve says both teams are limping into the midpoint of the season. The strength of the Packers defense has been the running game, but the injuries on the side of the ball are stacking up. This will be a close one, and the Packers pull it out on the road after two losses. Yeah, I just don't see Tennessee having enough to stop Green Bay. If Green Bay loses this football game, their season might be done, folks. So I think they're getting to that point where a lot of these games are now must win. They got to win this one if they want to have any chance of winning the division. We'll move to Tampa Bay where the Buccaneers host the Chicago Bears. I've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning at home. They've been playing good enough football. I think they're going to be a little upset after what happened last Thursday night. They've had 11 days to get ready for this football game. I like the Bucs. The other Steve says he's taking Chicago. He says both offenses are mediocre at best, and neither team has a breakout defense, but I think the Bears went on the road to continue the weed streak. I don't think the Bears are that good, and I think Tampa Bay will get after them, and I think the Bucs will win at home. The New York Jets host the Los Angeles Rams, and oddly enough, as much as I would like to take the Rams in this football game, they're sticking with Keenum, and I've seen enough of that guy that there's nothing else I want to see of him. I don't want to see him on the football field anymore. And I think that at halftime, if the offense has only put up 3-6 points, I think at halftime they might make a change, and I think it would be good for them. But regardless of what happens there, I think the Jets will win this football game at home. The other Steve says the Rams continue their four-game slide, and the Jets proved to be just enough to win this one in an ugly, low-scoring game. Yeah, I would take the under. Anytime the Rams are playing, take the under, man. Unless they're playing the Patriots, I take the under. All right, final game of interest. The Miami Dolphins travel to San Diego to face the Chargers. I am on the Chargers bandwagon right now. They're winning some pretty impressive games, games I have thought they had no business winning. Let's see. The other Steve says Miami's offense is beat up, and the cross-country trip will prove too much. The Chargers win at home, and I've got the Chargers winning at home. So, nap games, Cleveland at Baltimore. We both have the Baltimore Ravens. Houston at Jacksonville. I've got Jacksonville at home, while the other Steve has Houston on the road. And then the final game, San Francisco at Arizona. We both have the Cardinals winning at home. The bye week, Buffalo, Detroit, Indianapolis, and Oakland all sitting at home with bye weeks. So here's the deal. Steve has chosen Minnesota at Washington to be the challenge game. He's got Washington at home. I've got Minnesota on the road. I'm going to hope that Minnesota does jump back on top, as I'm predicting. So my final segment, no gloating again, just saying that 7-2 after the first 9 weeks of the season. This week, my lock of the week is the Atlanta Falcons -1 over the Philadelphia Eagles. I know they're on the road, but Philly does not have the kind of offense that Atlanta does. Atlanta will put up too many points, and all they got to do is win by 1 point. I think they'll win by more than that. So take Atlanta and give up the point, maybe even give up two if you have to. They should take care of business. That's all the time I have. Make sure you're following along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Get on it. If you haven't done so, and for those of you who have done so, go out to the Patreon page and become a patron if you're enjoying the season thus far. For you Patreon donors who have donated, make sure you check your emails this weekend. Saturday, I'll send out an email about the Patreon Google Hangout that I will have with all y'all before Sunday morning's games. Once again, this Sunday there will be a Patreon donor Google Hangout. Make sure you check out for your emails. That's all the time I have. You've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda, and I'm out.